The Legacy, Chapter 19, Sacrifice. Thibbledorf Puent stood at the end of the narrow tunnel, scanning the wide cavern beyond with his infravision, registering the shifting gradations of heat, that he might better understand the layout of the dangerous area ahead. He made out the many teeth of the ceiling, stalactites long and narrow, and saw two distinctly cooler lines indicating ledges on the high walls, one directly ahead, the other along the wall on his right. Dark holes lined the walls at the floor level in several places. Puent knew that one immediately to his left, two directly across from where he stood, and another diagonal ahead and to the right, under the ledge, likely were long tunnels, and figured several others to be smaller side chambers or alcoves. Gwenhyver was at the battle rager's side, the cat's ears flattened, its low growl barely perceptible. The panther sensed the danger, too, Puent realized. He motioned for Gwenhyver to follow him. Suddenly, he was not so upset at having so unusual a companion, and he skidded back down the corridor into the approaching torchlight to stop the others short of the room.
"There be at least three or four more ways in or out,"
the battle rager told his companions gravely.
"And lots of open ground across the place."
He went on to give a thorough description of the chamber, paying particular attention to the many obvious hiding spots. Brunner, sharing Puent's dark fears, nodded and looked to the others. He, too, felt that their enemies were near, were all about them, and had been steadily closing in. The Dwarf King looked back to the way they had come, and it was obvious to the others that he was trying to figure out some other way around this region.
"We can turn their hoped-for surprise against them," Catterbury offered, knowing the futility of Brunner's hopes.
The companions had precious little time to spare, and few of the side tunnels they had passed offered little promise of bringing them to the lower regions, or to wider tunnels where they might find Drizzt. A sparkle of battle lust came into Brunner's dark eyes, but he frowned a moment later when Gwenhyver plopped down heavily at Catterbury's feet.
"The cat's been about too long," the young woman reasoned. "Gwenhyver's needin' a rest soon."
Wulfgar's and the dwarf's expression showed that they did not welcome the news.
"More the reason to go straight ahead," Catterbury said determinedly. "Gwen's got a bit of fight left. Don't get out."
Brunner considered the words, then nodded grimly and slapped his many-notched axe across his open palm.
"Got to get in close to this enemy,"
he reminded his friends. Puent produced his bitter potion.
"Take another hit," he offered to Catterbury and Wulfgar. "Got to make sure the stuff's fresh in your belly."
Catterbury winced, but she did take the flask, then handed it to Wulfgar, who similarly frowned and took a brief draw. Brunner and Puent squatted to the floor between them, Puent quickly scratching a rough map of the chamber. They had no time for detailed plans, but Brunner sorted out areas of responsibility, assigning each person the task best suited to his or her battle style. The dwarf could give no specific directions to Gwenhyver, of course, and didn't bother to include Puent in much of the discussion, knowing that once the fight began, the battle rager would go off on his wild, undisciplined ways. Catterbury and Wulfgar, too, realized Puent's forthcoming role, and neither complained, understanding that, against skilled and precise opponents such as drow elves, a little chaos could well be a good thing. They kept the torch burning, even lit a second one, and started cautiously ahead, ready to put the fight on their own terms. As the torchlight breached the room, a darting black form cut through, going into the darkness in full flight. Gwenhyver broke to the right, cut left toward the center of the chamber, then darted right again toward the back wall. From somewhere ahead there came the sound of firing crossbows, followed by the skip of quarrels hitting the stone, always one step behind the dodging, leaping panther. Gwenhyver veered again at the last moment, leaped and turned sidelong, paws running along the vertical wall for several strides before the panther had come back to the floor. The cat's target, the high ledge on the right-hand wall, was now in sight, and Gwenhyver ran full out, speeding for it recklessly. At the base, in full stride and apparently soaring towards a head-first collision, the panther's muscles subtly shifted. Gwenhyver's direction change was almost perpendicular, the panther flying, seeming to run, straight up the 20-foot expanse to the ledge. the three dark elves atop the ledge could not have expected the incredible maneuver. Two fired their crossbows Gwenhyver's way and fell back into a tunnel. The third, having the misfortune to be directly in the leaping panther's path, could only throw his arms up as the panther fell over him. The torches flew into the room, lighting the battle area, followed by the leading charge of Brunner, flanked on his right by Wulfgar and on his left by Thibbledorf Puent. Catterbury quietly filtered in behind them, slipping to the side along the same general course Gwenhyver had taken, her bow readied and in hand. Again, the crossbows of unseen dark elves clicked, and all of the leading companions took hits. Wulfgar felt the venom streaming into his leg, but felt the tingling burn as Puent's potent potion counteracted its sleepy effects. A darkness spell fell over one of the torches, defeating its light, but Wulfgar was ready, lighting a third and tossing it far to the side. Puent noticed an enemy drow in the tunnel to the left, and off he went, predictably roaring with every charging stride. Brunner and Wulfgar slowed, but kept their course straight across the room, for the largest tunnel entrance is across the way. The barbarian caught sight of the flicker of drow eyes along the remaining ledge, farther ahead and above the tunnels. He stopped, twirled, and heaved his warhammer with a cry to his god. Aegis Fang went in low, crushing the lip of the walkway, smashing stone apart. One dark elf leaped away to another point on the long ledge. The other tumbled down, his leg blasted, and barely caught the stone halfway down the crumbling wall. Wulfgar did not follow the throw forward. He got hit again by a stinging quarrel, and rushed instead to the side, to the remaining tunnel along the right-hand wall, wherein crouched a pair of dark elves. Eager to join in close combat, Brunner veered behind the barbarian. The dwarf looked back before he had even completed the turn, though, as an eight-legged monster, the Drider, came out of the tunnel directly ahead, other dark forms shifting about behind it. With a whoop of delight, never considering the odds now that he and his friends were committed to the battle, the fiery dwarf veered again to his initial course, determined to meet the enemy, however many there might be, head on. It took all the discipline Catterbury could muster to hold her first shot in check. She really didn't have a good angle for either those that Puent had pursued, or the ledge where Gwenhyver had gone, and she didn't think it worth the trouble to spike the wounded drow hanging helplessly below the blasted ledge. Not yet. Brunner had bade her to make certain that her first shot, the one she might get before she was fully noticed, counted. The eager young woman watched the split between Brunner and Wulfgar and found her opportunity. A drow, crouching behind a 4-foot diagonal jag in the back wall, almost exactly halfway between her rushing companions, leaned out, crossbow in hand. The dark elf fired, then fell back in surprise as a silver arrow streaked past him, skipped off the stone, and left a smoldering scorch in its wake. Catterbury's second shot was in the air an instant later. She could no longer see the drow, fully covered by the stone, but she did not believe his cover so thick. The arrow hit the jutting slab 2 feet from its edge, 2 feet from where it joined the wall. There came a sharp crack as the rock split, followed by a grunt as the arrow blasted deep into the dying drow's skull. The prone dark elf on the high ledge scrambled and kicked, kept his buckler above him, and managed somehow to get his dagger out with his other hand. Only his fine mesh armor kept Gwenhyver's raking claws somewhat at bay, kept his mounting wounds serious but not mortal. He brought the dagger to bear on the panther's flank, but the weapon seemed small against such a foe, seemed only to further enrage the cat. His buckler arm was batted aside, back up over his head with enough force to dislocate his shoulder. He tried to get it back to block, but found it would not respond to his mind's frantic call. He scrambled to put his other hand in the great paw's way, a futile defense. Gwenhyver's claws hooked his scalp line just above his forehead. The drow plunged the dagger in again, praying for a quick kill. The panther's claws sheared off his face. Crossbows clicked again from down the tunnel at the back of the narrow ledge. Not really hurt, the panther came off its victim and lopped ahead in pursuit. The two dark elves summoned globes of darkness between them and the cat, turned and fled. If they had looked back, they might have rejoined the fight, for Gwenhyver's pursuit was not dogged. With the dagger and quarrel wounds, the insidious sleep poison, and the simple duration of the panther's visit to the plain, Gwenhyver's energy was no more.
The cat did not wish to leave, wanted to stay and fight beside the companions, to stay to hunt for its missing master. The magic of the figurine would not support the desires, though. A few strides into the darkened area, Gwenhyver stopped, barely holding a tentative balance. Panther flesh dissolved into gray smoke. The planar tunnel opened and beckoned. He got hit again as he exited the chamber, but the tiny quarrel did no more than bring a smile to the most wild battle rager's contorted face. A darkness globe blocked his flight, but he roared and barreled through, smiling even when he collided full force with the winding wall out the other side. The amazed dark elf, watching ferocious Puent's progress, spun away, darting along the tunnel, then turned a sharp corner. Puent came right behind, armor squealing and drool running from his fat lips in lines down his thick black beard.
"Stupid!"
he yelled, ducking his head as he spun the corner right behind the fleeing drow, fully expecting the ambush. Puent's darting helmet spike intercepted the sword cut, impaling his enemy through the forearm. The battle ranger didn't slow, but hurled himself into the air and lay out flat, body blocking his opponent across the chest and driving the drow to the ground under him. Glove nails dug for the dark elf's groin and face. Puent's ridged armor creased the fine mesh mail as he went into a series of violent convulsions. With each of the battle ranger's movements, waves of searing agony ran up the drow's impaled arm. Brunner noticed the slender form of a drow, wearing an outrageously wide-brimmed and plumed hat, moving about the entrance to the tunnel. Then came the flicker of objects cutting into the torchlight from behind the monstrous drider, and Brunner threw his shield up defensively. A dagger banged against the metal, then another, and a third behind that. The fourth throw came in low, scraping the dwarf's shin. The fifth dipped over the leaning shield as Brunner inevitably bent forward, cutting a line across the dwarf's scalp under the edge of his one-horned helmet. But minor wounds would not slow Brunner, nor would the sight of the bloated drider, axes waving, eight legs clacking and scrabbling. The dwarf came in hard, took a hit on the shield, and returned with a smash against the drider's second descending axe. Much smaller than his opponent, Brunner worked low, his axe smacking the hard exoskeleton of the drider's armored legs. All the while, the dwarf remained a blur of frenzied motion, his shield above him, as fine a shield as ever was forged, deflecting hit after hit from the wickedly edged, drow-enchanted weapons. Brunner's axe dove into the wedge between two legs, cracking through the drider's fleshy interior. The dwarf's smile was short-lived, though, for the drider's response banged hard on the shield, twisting it about on Brunner's arm, and the creature put a leg in line and kicked hard into the dwarf's belly, throwing Brunner back before his axe could do any real damage. He squared off, his breath lost and his arm aching. Again came a series of dagger throws from the corridor behind the drider, forcing Brunner off balance. He barely got his shield up to stop the last four. He looked down to the first, jutting from the front of his layered armor, a trickle of blood oozing from behind its tip, and he knew he had escaped death by a hair's breadth. He knew, too, that the distraction would cost him dearly, for he was no longer squared up for melee, and the drider was upon him. Wulfgar's flying hammer led the way to the corridor, his one throw more than matching the crossbow darts that struck the roaring barbarian. He aimed high, for the stalactite teeth hanging above the entryway, and his mighty hammer did its work perfectly, smashing apart several of the hanging rocks. One dark elf fell back. Wulfgar could not tell if the falling stone had crushed him or not, and the other dove forward, drawing sword and dagger, and coming up in the chamber to meet the unarmed barbarian's charge. Wulfgar skidded to a stop short of the flashing blades, skipped to the side, and kicked out, punched out, doing anything to keep the dangerous and quick opponent at bay for the few seconds the barbarian needed. The drow, not understanding the magic of Aegis Fang, took his time, seemed in no hurry to chance the grasp of the obviously mighty human. He came with a measured combination, sword, dagger, and dagger again, the last thrust painfully nicking the barbarian's hip. The drow smiled wickedly. Aegis Fang appeared in Wulfgar's waiting hands. With one hand, grasping low on the warhammer's handle, Wulfgar sent the weapon into a flowing circular motion in front of him.
The drow took careful measure of the weapon's speed. Wulfgar carefully appraised the drow's examination. In darted the dagger, behind the flowing hammer. Wulfgar's other hand clapped against the handle just under his weapon's head and abruptly reversed the direction, parrying the drow's attack aside. The drow was quick, snapping his sword in a downward angle for Wulfgar's shoulder, even as his dagger hand was knocked wide. Wulfgar's huge forearm flexed with the strain as he halted the heavy hammer's flow, snapping it back up in front of him. He caught Aegis Fang halfway up the handle with his free hand and jabbed diagonally up, the warhammer's solid head intercepting the sword and driving it harmlessly away. The end of the parry left the drow with one arm wide and low, the other wide and high, and left Wulfgar standing before his opponent in perfect balance, both hands grasping Aegis Fang. Before the dark elf could recover his wide-flying blades, before he could set his feet to dive away, Wulfgar chopped him, the hammer crunching under his shoulder and driving down toward the opposite hip. The drow fell back from the blow then, as though the full weight of the incredible hit had not immediately registered, went into an involuntary backward hop that slammed him against the wall. One leg buckling, one lung collapsed, the drow brought his sword horizontally before his face in a meager defense. Hands low on the handle, Wulfgar brought the hammer up behind him and slammed it home with all of his strength through the blade and into the drow's face. With a sickening crack, the drow's skull exploded, crushed between the unyielding stone of the wall and the unyielding metal of the mighty Aegis Fang. A blinding streak of silver halted the Drider's attacks and saved Brunner Battlehammer. The arrow didn't hit the Drider, however. It soared high, pegging the wounded drow, who had just about climbed back to the blasted ledge, to the stone wall. The distraction, the moment to recover from the daggers, was all Brunner needed. He came in hard again, his many-notched axe smashing the Drider's closest leg, his shield up high to block the now off-balance axe swipes. The dwarf pressed right into the beast, using its bulk to offer him some cover from the enemies in the corridor, and bulled it backward before it could set its many legs against the charge. Another of Catterby's arrows whipped past him, sparking as it ricocheted against the stone of the corridor. Brunner grinned widely, thankful that the gods had delivered to him an ally and friend as competent as Catterby. The first two arrows enraged Verna. The third, coming down the corridor, nearly took off her head. Jarlaxle raced back from his position near the chamber's entrance to join her.
"Formidable," the mercenary admitted. "I have dead soldiers in the room."
Verna raced forward, focusing on the dwarf battling her mutated brother.
"Where is Driz Duarden?"
she demanded, using magic to focus her voice so that Brunner could hear her through the Drider.
"You hit me and you're meaning to talk?"
the dwarf howled, finishing his sentence with an exclamation point in the form of a chopping axe. One of Dinan's legs fell free, and the dwarf barreled on, pushing the unbalanced Drider back another few strides. Verna hardly had the chance to begin her intended spell before Jarlaxle grabbed her and hauled her down. Her instinctive anger toward the mercenary was lost in the blast of yet another streaking arrow, this one driving a hole into the stone wall where the priestess had been standing. Verna remembered Entreri's warning about this group, had the evidence right before her as the battle continued to sour. She trembled with rage, growled indecipherably as she considered what the defeat might cost her. Her thoughts fell inward, followed the path of her faith toward her dark deity, and cried out to Loth.
"Verna!"
Jarlaxle called from someplace remote. Loth could not allow her to fail, had to help her against this unexpected obstacle, that she might deliver the sacrifice.
"Verna!"
She felt the mercenary's hand on her, felt the hands of a second drow helping Jarlaxle put her back on her feet.
"Wisha!"
came her unintentional cry. Then she knew only calm, knew that Loth had answered her call. Jarlaxle and the other drow slammed against the tunnel's walls from the force of Verna's magical outburst. Each looked at her with trepidation. The mercenary's features relaxed when Verna bade him to follow her further along the corridor, out of harm's way.
"Loth will help us finish what we have started here,"
the priestess explained. Catterby put another arrow into the corridor for good measure, then glanced about, searching for a more apparent target. She studied the battle between Brunner and the monster's Strider, but she knew that any shots she made at the bloated monster would be too risky given the furious melee. Wulfgar apparently had his situation under control. A drow lay dead at his feet as he peeked about the rubble of the collapsed corridor in search of the enemy who had not come in. Puent was nowhere to be found. Catterby looked up to the blasted ledge above Brunner and the Strider for the drow who had not fallen, then to the other ledge where Gwenhaver had disappeared. In a small alcove below that area, the young woman saw a curious sight, a gathering of mists similar to that heralding the panther's approach. The clouds shifted colors, became orange, almost like a swirling ball of flames. Catterby sensed an evil aura, gathering and overwhelming, and put her bow back in line. The hairs on the back of her neck tingled. Something was watching her. Catterby dropped the Heartseeker and spun about, snapping her short sword from its sheath with her turn, barely in time to bat aside the thrusting sword of a levitating drow that had silently descended from the ceiling. Wulfgar, too, noticed the mist, and he knew that it demanded his attention, that he must be ready to strike out at it as soon as its nature was revealed. He could not ignore Catterby's sudden cry, though, and when he looked at her, he found her hard-pressed, nearly sitting on the floor, her short sword working furiously to keep her attacker at bay. In the shadows, some distance behind the young woman and her attacker, another dark shape began its descent. The warm blood of his torn enemy mingled with the drool on Thibeldorf Puent's beard. The drow had stopped thrashing, but Puent, reveling in his kill, had not. A crossbow quarrel pierced his ear. His head came up as he roared, the impaled helmet spike lifting the dead drow's arm weirdly. There stood another enemy, advancing steadily. Up leapt the battle rager, snapping his head from side to side, whipping the caught drow back and forth until the ebon skin ripped apart, freeing the helmet spike. The approaching drow elf stopped his advance, trying to make sense of the gruesome scene. He was moving again, back the other way, when indomitable Puent took up the roaring charge. The drow was truly amazed at the stubby dwarf's frantic pace, amazed that he could not easily outdistance this enemy. He wouldn't have run too far anyway, though, preferring to bait this dangerous one away from the main battle. They went through a series of twisting corridors, the dark elf 10 strides ahead. His graceful steps barely seemed to alter as he leaped, landing and spinning about, sword ready and smile wide. Puent never slowed. He merely ducked his head to put his helmet spike in line. With his eyes to the stone, the battle rager realized the trap too late as he crossed the rim of a pit the drow had suddenly leapt across. Down went the battle rager, crashing and bouncing, the many points of his battle armor throwing sparks as he skidded along the stone. He cracked a rib against the rounded top of a stalagmite mound some distance down, bounced completely over, and landed flat on his back in the lower chamber. He lay there for some time, admiring the cunning of his enemy, and admiring the curious way the ceiling, tons of solid rock, continued to spin about. No novice with the sword, Catterby worked her blade marvelously, using every defense Driz Duarden had shown her to get back some measure of equal footing. She was confident that the drow's initial advantage was fading, confident that she could soon get her feet under her and come back up evenly against her opponent. Then, suddenly, she had no one to fight. Aegis Fang twirled by her, its windy wake bringing her thick hair about, and hit the surprised dark elf full force, blasting him away. Catterby spun about, her initial appreciation lost as soon as she recognized Wulfgar's protectiveness. The mist near the barbarian was forming by then, taking on the substantial, corporeal body of a denizen of some vile lower plane, some enemy far more dangerous than the dark elf Catterby had been battling. Wulfgar had come to her aid at the risk of his own peril, had put her safety above his own. To Catterby, confident that she could have taken care of her own situation, the act seemed more stupid than altruistic. Catterby went for her bow. She had to get to her bow. Before she even had her hands on it, though, the monster, the Yawklaw, came fully to the plane. Amorphous, it somewhat resembled a lump of half-melted wax, showing 8 tentacle-like appendages and a central gaping maw lined with long, sharp teeth. Catterby sensed danger behind her before she could call out to Wulfgar. She spun,
bow in hand, and looked up to her enemy, to a drow's sword fast descending for her head. Caterbury shot first. The arrow jolted the drow several inches from the floor and passed right through the dark elf to explode in a shower of sparks against the ceiling. The drow was still standing when he came back to the floor, still holding his sword, his expression revealing that he was not quite sure what had just happened. Caterbury grabbed her bow like a club and jumped up to meet him, pressing him fiercely until his mind registered the fact that he was dead. She looked back once to see Wulfgar grabbed by one of the Yawkclaw's tentacles, then another. All the barbarian's incredible strength could not keep him from the waiting maw. Brunner could see nothing but the black of the Drider's torso as he continued to bull in, continued to drive Dinan backward. He could hear nothing except the sounds of flying blades, the clang of metal against metal, or the sound of cracking shell whenever his axe struck home. He knew instinctively that Caterbury and Wulfgar, his children, were in trouble. Brunner's axe finally caught up with the retreating creature with full force as the dryad slammed against the wall. Another spider leg fell away. Brunner planted his feet and heaved with all of his strength, launching himself several feet back. Dinan, weirdly contorted, two legs lost, did not immediately pursue, glad for the reprieve. But ferocious Brunner came back in, the dwarf's savagery overwhelming the wounded dryad. Brunner's shield blocked the first axe, his helmet blocked the following strike, a blow that should have dropped him. Straight across whipped the dwarf's mini-notched axe, above the hard exoskeleton to cut a jagged line across the bloated drider's belly. Hot gore spewed out. Fluids ran down the drider's legs and Brunner's pumping arms. Brunner went into a frenzy, his axe smacking repeatedly, incessantly into the crook between the drider's two foremost legs. Exoskeleton gave way to flesh. Flesh opened to spill more gore. Brunner's axe struck hard yet again, but he took a hit atop the shoulder of his weapon arm. The drider's awkward angle stole most of the strength from the blow, and the axe did not get through Brunner's fine mithril mail, but a blast of hot agony assaulted Brunner. His mind screamed that Caterbury and Wulfgar needed him. Grimacing against the pain, Brunner whipped his axe in an upward backhand, its flat back cracking against the drider's elbow. The creature howled, and Brunner brought the weapon to bear again, angled up the other way, catching the drider in the armpit, and shearing the creature's arm off. Caterbury and Wulfgar needed him. The drider's long reach got its second axe around the dwarf's blocking shield, its bottom edge drawing a line of blood up the back of Brunner's arm. Brunner tucked the shield in close and shoulder-blocked the monster against the wall. He bounced back, drove his axe in hard at the monster's exposed side, then shoulder-blocked again. Back bounced the dwarf, in chopped his axe, and Brunner's stubby legs twitched again, sending him hurtling forward. This time, Brunner heard the drider's other axe fall to the floor, and when he bounced back, he stayed back, chopping wildly with his axe, driving the drider to the stone, splitting flesh and breaking ribs. Brunner turned about, saw Caterbury in command of her situation, and took a step toward Wulfgar. Whisha! Waves of energy hit the dwarf, lifting his feet from the ground and launching him a dozen feet through the air to slam against the wall. He rebounded in a redirected run, and he cried a single note of rage as he bore down on the entrance to the distant tunnel, the eyes of several drow watching him from farther within. Whisha! Came the cry once more, and Brunner was moving backward suddenly.
How many you got?
The tough dwarf roared, shrugging off this newest hit against the wall. The eyes, every set, turned away. A globe of darkness fell over the dwarf, and he was, in truth, glad for its cover, for that last slam had hurt him more than he cared to admit. A fourth soldier joined Verena, Jarlaxle, and their one bodyguard as they again moved deeper into the tunnels.
"Dwarf to the side," the newcomer explained. "Insane, wild with rage. I put him down a pit, but I doubt he has stopped."
Verena began to reply, but Jarlaxle interrupted her, pointing down a side passage to yet another drow, signaling to them frantically in the silent hand code.
"Devil cat," the distant drow signaled.
A second form rushed by him, followed by a third, a few seconds later. Jarlaxle understood the movements of his troops, knew that these three were the survivors of two separate battles, and understood that both the ledge and the side passage below had been lost.
"We must go," he signaled to Verna. "Let us find a more advantageous region where we might continue this fight."
"Loth has answered my call," Verna growled at him. "A handmaiden has arrived."
"More the reason to be gone," Jarlaxle replied aloud. "Show your faith in the Spider Queen, and let us be on with the hunt for your brother."
Verna considered the words for just a moment, then, to the worldly mercenary's relief, nodded her agreement. Jarlaxle led her along at a great pace, wondering if it could be true that only 7 of his skilled Bregendiarth force, himself and Verna included, remained. Wulfgar's arms slapped wildly at the waving tentacles, his hands clasped over those appendages wrapping him, trying to break free of their iron grip. More tentacles slapped in at him, forcing his attention. He was jerked out straight, yanked sidelong into the great maw, and he understood these newest slapping attacks to be merely diversions. Razor-edged teeth dug into his back and ribs, tore through muscle, and scraped against bone. He punched out and grabbed a handful of slimy Yawklaw skin, twisting and tearing a hunk free. The creature did not react, continued to bite bone, razor teeth working back and forth across the trapped torso. Aegis Fang came back to Wulfgar's hand, but he was twisted awkwardly for any hits against his enemy. He swung anyway, connecting solidly, but the fleshy, rubbery hide of the evil creature seemed to absorb the blows, sinking deep beneath the weight of Aegis Fang. Wulfgar swung again, twisted about despite the searing pain. He saw Caterbury standing free, the second drow lying dead at her feet, and her face locked in an expression of open horror as she stared at the white of Wulfgar's exposed ribs. Still, the image of his love, free from harm, brought a grimace of satisfaction to the barbarian's face. A bolt of silver flashed right below, startling Wulfgar, blasting the Yawklaw, and the barbarian thought his salvation at hand, thought that his beloved Caterbury, the woman he had dared to underestimate, would strike his attacker down. A tentacle wrapped around Caterbury's ankles and jerked her from her feet. Her head hit the stone hard, her precious bow fell from her grasp, and she offered little resistance as the Yawklaw began to pull her in.
"No!"
Wulfgar roared, and he whacked again and again, futilely at the rubbery beast. He cried out for Brunner, out of the corner of his eye. He saw the dwarf stumble out of a dark globe, far away and dazed. The Yawklaw's maul crunched mercilessly. A lesser man would have long collapsed under the force of its bite. Wulfgar could not allow himself to die, though, not with Caterbury and Brunner in danger. He began a hearty song to Tempus, his god of battle. He sang with lungs fast filling with blood, with a voice that came from a heart that had pumped mightily for more than 20 years. He sang, and he forgot the waves of crippling pain. He sang, and the song came back to his ears, echoing from the cavern walls like a chorus from the minions of an approving god. He sang, and he tightened his grip on Aegis Fang. Wulfgar struck out, not against the beast, but against the alcove's low ceiling. The hammer chopped through dirt hooked about stone. Pebbles and dust fell all about the barbarian and his attacker. Again and again, all the while singing, Wulfgar slammed at the ceiling. The Yawklaw, not a stupid beast, bit fiercely, shook its great maw wildly, but Wulfgar had passed beyond the admission of pain. Aegis Fang chopped upward. A chunk of stone followed its inevitable descent. As soon as she recovered her wits, Caterbury saw what the barbarian was doing. The Yawklaw was no longer interested in her, was no longer pulling her in, and she managed to claw her way back to her bow.
"No, me boy!"
she heard Brunner cry from across the way. Caterbury knocked an arrow and turned about. Aegis Fang slammed against the ceiling. Caterbury's arrow sizzled into the Yawklaw an instant before the ceiling gave way. Huge boulders toppled down, any space between them quickly filled with piles of rock and soil, spewing clouds of dust into the air. The chamber shook violently, the collapse resounding through all the tunnels. Neither Caterbury nor Brunner still stood. Both
huddled on the floor, their arms defensively over their heads as the cave-in slowly ended. Neither could see amid the darkness and the dust. Neither could see that both the monster and Wulfgar had disappeared under tons of collapsing stone.